Joel tells us that on page 96 of this book, Thunder of Silence, he has given us the secret of the infinite way. He says it in a few words, and because it falls in this chapter, we will take notice of it. The very bottom, this is the secret of the infinite way, and it is the secret of healing. Henceforth, know we no man after the flesh. Now, that's quite a secret. To be the secret of the infinite way, when the infinite way is the secret of the Christ teaching. And so we may say the statement he made must also be the secret of the teaching of Jesus Christ. Henceforth, know we no man after the flesh. And here we have gone 30, 40, 50, 60, 70 years, knowing every person after the flesh, for many lifetimes, fully conditioned to the belief that the flesh we see is the person. Here is the secret of the infinite way that we can never judge that appearance to be what it appears to be. Now, after we have read the chapter and even understood it, the first person that comes into our presence is treated exactly as we treated that person before. I've been through that, and you have been through that, and we both know that no matter how we determine to know no man after the flesh, there is some instinct in us that automatically sees, accepts, and treats that individual as the same human form we have always known, especially if there is a love attachment, especially if there is a hate attachment, especially if there is a fear attachment, especially if it is someone very close to us, especially if it happens to be our mother, especially if it happens to be the child that I bore. All of this is contrary to the teaching. What kind of a teaching can it possibly be that wishes us to leave mother and father and sister and brother for my sake? How in the world can we accomplish that ability to look out through human eyes and to know what God sees instead of what our naked eyes see? Now, we've all been trying to do that. We find a phrase that enters into mind: you shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free. And even though we have tried to know the truth, and we know many beautiful words, somehow there is an elusive truth not contained in those words. For you can remember within the last 48 hours that there was someone you in some way did not see as the Christ, someone you saw as just the paper boy or the grocer, or another pedestrian or another driver on the street. And when it gets to politics, we all see after the flesh. When it gets to nations, we see after the flesh. Now, we have learned that as we judge, we are judged. We have learned that as we see a rose and pronounce it good, but look at another flower and pronounce it not as good, that we have denied the omnipresence of God. God where that rose is no more or less than God where the other flower is. And right there, we have a bottleneck in our conditioned minds. We are told to lean not on our own understanding, but to trust the Lord in all our ways. And this begins to demand of us a surrender of all of the natural inclinations that we feel. We just long to go out and praise this and condemn that. Criticism happens to be an innate quality of the human mind. It's hard to set it aside, but finally, it dawns upon us that the criticism we are sending out is going to return in abundance to us. And then we begin to see that we are not to hold back criticism simply because it is the moral thing to do, but because it stands between us and the acceptance that God is all. It presents our demonstration of truth. It is a glass darkly. It plays a trick upon us. Now we are beginning to look at people with that single eye. Yes, they appear to be flesh, but we are to learn how to unmask the form, how to understand the form, how to look through the appearance, and to feel there the Son of God, the invisible offspring, the Christ, in spite of the fear, the hate, or the love that we may have felt before we dedicated our lives to becoming a clear channel for God. So our pilgrimage into self-denial, into surrender, into acceptance that if I believe in God, it must be more than lip service. I was called to a little meeting the other day with one rather famous astrologer and two not so famous. And they said, we'd like you to attend this meeting because we would like, well, we'd like a little God present in this broadcast. And then they invited someone else who were to take the negative side against astrology. And in the conversation, it came out that the astrologer reads the externals and then forms conclusions. And one of the astrologers happened to be a person who had studied something of the Far East. He was talking about the inner man, which he called the Atman. And I said to him, if you believe in the inner man, why do you have to read the outer stars to find out more about what man should do? And so the conversation abruptly took another turn. They weren't interested in discussing that phase of it. And finally, when I flatly said that astrology was a repudiation of the Christ message, all three astrologers jumped on me. Oh no, we believe in God. Oh, we believe in God. Oh, I believe in God. Oh yes, we have spiritual feelings. Now you see, to believe in God is what the world thinks it is doing. It thinks it believes in God, but it believes in God without believing in the things that God is saying, and without accepting the divine laws that are laid down by the Spirit through the inspired prophets. You cannot believe in God unless you accept that which God is saying. And God says, look unto me, all ye ends of the earth, for there is no other. I am the Lord thy God. Seek ye first the kingdom, not the stars. And I was very unpopular that day, because the astrologers like to talk out of both sides of their mouth, to pretend a belief in God, or to even think we have a belief in God, we must be moving in the will of the Father. And the will of the Father looks out and it says, I see no iniquity. I see no sin. I see no sickness. I see no birth. I see no death. I see God the Father and God the Son, and there is no other. And we who believe in God must believe in that which God tells us is the truth, that God is all. And therefore, we cannot believe in the existence of evil. We cannot believe that tomorrow there will be a doom over the world because of something the stars told us. We cannot believe that on a certain day of the month one shouldn't cross the border, or one shouldn't make a trip, or one shouldn't head for another country. We cannot believe that on a certain day the weather will become so unsatisfactory that we must stay home because it could very well be a catastrophe. Once we accept God, we accept all that goes with God, and that means we have eradicated from our consciousness every belief in the presence or possibility of sin, immorality, vice, crime, evil, sickness, death. These are not possible in God. There's no polluted stream in the kingdom of God. There's no war in the kingdom of God. There's no good person or bad person in the kingdom of God. So all these judgments persisting are our unbelief in God. And when we prognosticate through the stars that tomorrow this or that will happen, or this or that catastrophe will engulf the world, we're not believing in God. We're practicing atheism and saying we believe in God. And although I wouldn't call astrologers atheists on a public broadcast, I very gladly say it right now that anyone who believes in God must accept the fact that perfection is the only reality. There can be no imperfection. And so we unmask the forms. We see that the things that we fear are not things at all. We find that the things that we fear are our own beliefs. That is all we have ever faced as a problem. You have never faced a person or a condition. You have faced your own beliefs. Your beliefs, made visible and tangible, constitute what you have called condition, what you have called person, what you have called thing. You will discover perhaps today that the world we walk in is not made of things, is not made of persons, is not made of conditions, but is made of thought. All of it, completely. Cosmic thought, individually received, individually accepted, individually reacted to. And it is your reaction to the cosmic thought that creates the person, the form, and the condition. Now, the essence of this chapter and the reason it is the secret of the infinite way is that it unveils the lie that prevents us from walking now in the kingdom of God. There is a possibility that as you become aware that cosmic thought moving through what we call this world touches you, evokes a reaction, and that reaction becomes your outer experience. As that reaction is stilled, cosmic thought passes you by. In that absence of reaction, in that taking of no cosmic thought, you find a new lease on life. You find you're able to unmask the forms of this world. Now take a moment to see that everything that occurs in this world is not of God. The earthquake, the disaster, the flood and the fire, the hate, the racism, all of the concepts that we entertain and which change from day to day and year to year, these are not of God. The weather is not of God. The forest, the oceans are not of God. Nothing of a material nature is of God. But how does it get here? How do we unmask the illusion so that we can walk in the freedom of the Spirit? Now, if you will just up-tilt your face a little and let the infinite be your target, you will find that all around you are cosmic thought waves. This will be the glass darkly. This will be the great deceiver which has masked us from reality since the birth of the human race. Cosmic thought waves moving through you. You will find that as you become aware of this, you can, with closed eyes, feel the actual flow of cosmic thought waves and let them come up against your face just as a seashore would let the water come upon the shore. Unblinking, unmoving, feeling cosmic thought waves move toward you and you permitting them to flow by. Slowly a great joy develops in the knowledge that you can do this and let all that is not of the Father move into your consciousness with no reaction on your part. You can literally know that this world, all of it, is one cosmic image with an infinite variety of thought forms in it, all moving past you for acceptance. And as you feel the pulse of this, you may realize that you too, as a form, are nothing more than a cosmic thought wave. And up to now, your life has consisted of this form, this cosmic thought wave that you appear to be, reacting against the cosmic thought waves all around you. You may even feel, for a moment, that there is no real you walking on the earth. But rather, you are melting the finite concepts, the limitations, the boundaries that have placed you upon the earth as human flesh, in a form, in a weight, in a mold, which henceforth you must recognize is not you. You will find that this may be the first moment in which you have ever experienced that we are not really walking upon the earth. We are consciousness. And the illusion of person walking upon the earth is dispelled as suddenly something in you bubbles up and releases you from the conditioned concept of centuries. You begin to know why omnipresence is the name of God the Father and God the Son. You begin to know why there can be no evil in reality. You begin to know that no person has ever been sick. You begin to understand the non-reality of both birth and death. You begin to feel the infinite possibility of your own being. And as you maintain this practice of contemplating, of permitting yourself to feel the cosmic flow of thought waves with no reaction, you will develop a power of non-resistance to non-existence. And you will find that as this power develops, you can walk through that which comes invisibly as cosmic thought and recognize it instinctively, creating within you a vacuum through which the infinite enters instead. Now take your hand. You can move it left or right. Your heart, you can't do that. Rather, the beat of the heart is controlled by something else. The flow of the blood is controlled by something else. The multiplication of cells and the transmutation of them is controlled by something else. Now, this something else is not God. That which controls your heart, your pulse, your bloodstream, the breath you inhale and exhale, this is cosmic thought. It has nothing to do with God. And that is why when Joel meditated upon the illness of his father, he was told from within, man does not live by breath alone. He had discovered in that moment of inspiration that our lives do not depend on our breathing at all. Only the fleshly image depends on the breathing, and the fleshly image is not our life. It is cosmic thought made visible. You can take that and go very far with it, and you will discover that cosmic thought made visible as your heartbeat, first as your heart and then as your heartbeat, first as your lungs and then as the inhalation and exhalation, comes into your conscious awareness, and now it makes you move your hand to the left or the right, or your foot, or your body, and you think you're doing this volitionally. It's as non-volitional as the beat of your heart. It simply has come within the range of your conscious awareness, and it has fooled us all into thinking that we are moving the hand. We are moving the foot. But you see, the image in the flesh has absolutely no power, although it seems to think it can decide to do this or that. Well, you say, I can run up the street and I can run down the street. But you cannot. That is the hypnotism. The image that goes up and down the street is not going up and down because you decided to. The cosmic mind decides, and you merely do it, under the illusion that you are doing it. And it's quite a shock later when you discover that even the birth of a baby is a cosmic mind projection. We are here to unmask the truth. And we find that stillborn babies and mongoloid babies and mothers who die in childbirth are not of God, but rather of the cosmic mind. Cosmic thought appearing as. And what about the good babies? Henceforth know ye no baby after the flesh. Yes, it's a very shocking subject, but it is the secret of the infinite way. And it was the secret of Jesus who declared that he was not born of woman. Now, as we develop the capacity to walk through this visible world, knowing it is not a physical world at all, it is not a biologic thing, it is not a material substance. It consists of your beliefs and my beliefs and the cosmic mind beliefs that we accept turned into the visible, tangible things of this world. These are not things, they are beliefs. And it has been given to us that you do never remove a condition. You're only wasting your time. Never do you remove a condition. Instead, you learn the mystical secret that you remove a belief. As you remove a belief, you discover that the condition dissolves. And the reason it does is because the belief within is the condition without. As you remove the belief in an evil person, you discover that that evil of that individual cannot be directed at you. As you remove the belief that would condemn or unforgive or in some way be critical, you discover this removal of belief prevents condemnation, criticism, and unforgiveness from being directed at you. The belief entertained within becomes the absence of the condition without. Truth within becomes truth without. Harmony within becomes harmony without. Spiritual power within becomes the visible manifestation of the qualities of God surrounding you like a halo. Now then, if you were to apply this principle to all your conditions, problems, disturbances, you would discover that when you are able to dismiss the condition, you have completely taken dominion over the material world. You have set it aside. All of the material universe is of no concern to you. Now you're on the higher rung. You're in the mental universe, the universe of beliefs. And knowing that mind within becomes condition or substance without, that every form is mind externalized, we now have completely obliterated the need to remove an external condition. We see through the hypnosis of it. The condition which we would remove is not there. We are looking at our belief made visible. Now we take this belief. What put it there? Maybe heredity, maybe education, maybe habit, maybe our environment, maybe the conditioning of past lives, maybe the beliefs of our present parents or our past parents. Always, we know that the belief which accepts the presence of any form of iniquity on this earth is accepting that which God did not create. Did God pronounce you to suffer? Does God give us a malignancy? Does God send boys of one nation out to kill boys of another nation? And if God, the only power, the only creator, the only source, has not put these things on earth, our belief in their existence is our denial of the oldness of God, the power of God, the presence of God. And in that denial, our misbelief becomes that which makes us suffer, that which makes us unable to walk in oneness. Now you reverse this. Henceforth, know we no man after the flesh. Because as we discovered last week, all you can truthfully say about a rose is it is a rose. You cannot endow it with qualities from your mind. We learn to move through the rose and let the spirit establish in our consciousness that everything in spirit is infinite, perfect, unchanging, incorporeal, eternal. And we find out the qualities of a rose through the spirit within us. Now we apply this to the flesh. The flesh of people. Animal, vegetable, and mineral. We let the Spirit define what is and what is not. We of our own selves do not lean on our understanding, on our judgment. I cannot judge that which is before me with a human mind. Or else all of my heredity, education, or lack of it, environmental experience, past conditioning, will enter into that judgment. And so in the vacuum of non-judgment, we are letting the Spirit define that out here is no thief. Out here is no cheat. Out here is no corrupt politician. Out here is no ignoramus. We are setting aside our judgments of this world. Just as we did for the rose, now we look and we say, flesh is flesh is flesh. All I can do is name it. I can have no opinion about it, because any opinion that I entertain is a judgment. And every judgment is a sword pointed directly at me. Where this individual stands who I would judge as good or bad, fat or thin, healthy or unwell, all that stands there is the invisible Son of God. The recognition of Christ, where the world sees flesh, is the discipline that we learn to practice without ceasing. 99% of the time, we're unable to do it. And then someday, we're able to do it 98% of the time. But to walk with God, to say, I believe, means that you must believe the omnipresence of God, which automatically makes you reject that which is not the presence of God, that which is not the presence of Christ. And finally, this is your commitment to walk with God wherever you are. Wherever your eyes look, they must be the single eye, the eye that never accepts that God has an opposite. Or God has a lesser self somewhere. Your love for your neighbor becomes the acceptance of Christ everywhere, even where your common sense tells you that you're simply making a great mistake by judging this particular individual as a communist, or this particular individual as a revolutionary, or this particular individual as a greedy person. Now, we had an experience recently along these lines, which is important today. It concerns a woman who called for help about her son. And we noticed that she was rather reluctant to disclose the details. All she would say is he was arrested. Well, what did he do? Well, he did something he shouldn't have done. And you had all kinds of possible ideas. And then she blurted out that he was one of the seven in Chicago. And we realized that what she was really saying was that the government had indicted him for being a revolutionary. She wanted help for him. The question is, if henceforth we know no man after the flesh, and if God knows no man after the flesh, is this boy a revolutionary? What is that phrase? So we found that in the meditations, there had to be exactly what we're talking about today, no judgment. You could be the most avid nationalist you wish to be, but if you're going to live in spirit, there can be no judgment, no prejudgment, no after judgment, no judgment at any time. And so all we had here was the invisible Spirit of God on trial in Chicago. There was nothing else there. And who was he on trial before? Who else was there in Chicago but the invisible Spirit of God? Now, that was 21 weeks ago. And the boy sort of laughed at his mother. He wasn't too interested in this. I was tempted to, rather, I was led to write her in this vein. Your boy may be indicted as a revolutionary, but I can assure you he is not that in God's eyes. And we may discover that even all of the beliefs of men that he is one, when faced with the knowledge that God does not see him as one, may uncover some unusual events. And that was after 3, 4, 5 meditations on the subject. And so, finally, last Sunday, just before this class, at 11 o'clock, I received a call from that woman. And she said, the judge has issued citations for 3 or 4 of the boys. And I just spoke to my son, and he really broke down, cried. In fact, he went sort of hysterical. All he could see was the injustice of something. And then she told me something that I hadn't known up to then. She said when he was 15, he went to a party and he took a friend with him who was colored. A colored boy, and this boy he had taken to the party was to play the flute there. When he came to the party, they said, if you bring this colored boy in, we don't want you at all. You'll have to stay out too. That stuck with this boy. And he said to his mother, you know, I may be considered a revolutionary, but I'm really working for a world where you can take a colored boy to play a flute. Nobody's going to argue about it, among other things. And so it developed that this woman then asked me to work, or asked if I was still working on the case. And I can assure you that what help I gave in the last moments was very minimal. And yet, the next day, as I read the paper, there was a citation against this boy. He was to get 6 months. Others were getting 2 months, 6 months, 8 months. Some were getting years. And I thought to myself, well, that's contrary to what Spirit told me 21 weeks ago. And then on Wednesday, about 1 in the afternoon, 2 in the afternoon, the mother called. She said, did you hear the news? She said, John has been acquitted. Now, of all the boys there, they were all given 5 years, except 2. One I had nothing to do with, and the other we had to witness the non-reality of the flesh. And as strange as it may seem, and as contrary and preconditioned as the judge was, it would never appear possible that any of those boys could come out of that without a sentence. And yet the only one who had spiritual work done did come out of it without a sentence. And so there is a power. It wasn't a coincidental power. There is an invisible power of truth, and it says always, where there is a thief, where there is a murderer, where there is a revolutionary, this is the illusion. Thou art my beloved Son, in whom I am well pleased, is the truth behind every form that we see. And there are no exceptions. It doesn't even matter if the person believes in God. And this boy was an atheist. The last thing in the world he believed in was the power of God. It was his mother's consciousness that really released him. And the chances are that if the other boys had such mothers, they too would not have had their 5-year sentences. Now, the reason we mention this case today is because it just happened at this time, and it also happened at a time when I was teaching the unconditioned mind to one of the students privately. And so it came as a perfectly timed lesson for the understanding of the unconditioned mind. Now, as we go along and see people that we call the kind of names that we all put and label people with, we are turning the Spirit of God away from our experience, because that Spirit can never function through and in the critical, conditioned, opinionated human mind. In fact, no healing can ever come through a human mind. All healing has to be on the spiritual level, and then it will manifest on the human level. Now, you take the psychiatrist. While he's probing the mind of his patient, the last laugh is really on the cosmic brain, because this cosmic mind is not only the mind of the patient, it's also the mind of the psychiatrist. When the doctor is operating on his patient, the cosmic mind is not only the form of the patient, it's also the form of the doctor. The cosmic mind image is what you're looking at in every person you see. But behind it is the divine image. And for you to accept only the divine image that stands behind the mental image of the human, or the animal, or the mineral, or the vegetable, this is sowing to the spirit. We know that we are not the divine image and likeness as we stand. But we do know that there is the divine image and likeness, and it is omnipresent, and it is our reality, and it is the reality of all. And so there is no evil in that individual who is a revolutionary. There is no evil in that murderer. You are seeing the acceptance of cosmic thought in a cosmic image, appearing locally. We learn to impersonalize the belief in evil in any individual, because if we do not, we are as hypnotized as they. And we are then subject to the same cosmic suggestions that they are subject to. And so you see, your purification is the acceptance that God is all. God is the only being. God is the only life. God is the only law. And every appearance to the contrary is nothing more than a temptation to make you localize, personalize, and comment about things that are not true in the infinite spiritual universe. As you judge, you are then judged. It is your judgment that returns to judge you. It is your belief that returns as the conditions of your life. And the moment you accept the belief that it is possible for God to be all and there also to be a murderer, you have opened yourself to the possibility of being murdered. When you accept that there is a thief as well as God, you have opened yourself to the possibility of being burglarized. When you open yourself to the belief that there is God and a good one or a bad one, you have lost the truth that God is all and the only. You have lost the one being, the one life, the one self. And it's fidelity to the one self which ultimately removes from you the possibility of judging. I cannot judge God, and there is no other.